The headlines: Iran launches fresh drone and missile strikes on positions of the Iraqi-based terror groups operating against the Islamic Republic. Turkey arrests 46 people in connection with a bomb attack in an iconic Istanbul street that left 6 people dead. And the U.S. and Chinese presidents meet in Bali ahead of the G20 summit amid rising tensions between the two countries. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has once again conducted drone and missile strikes to hit bases of terrorists in Iraq's northern Kurdistan Autonomous Region. The strikes targeted positions of terrorist groups operating against the Islamic Republic. The IRGC has carried out airstrikes on terrorist hideouts in northern Iraq on several occasions. Recently, the force says that this is a response to their operations against Iran. Iran has opted for the strike after the Kurdistan regional government failed to take appropriate measures against the terrorists. We were earlier joined by political commentator Samati Torabi for his take on the IRGC operations in northern Iraq.
As you said, it's not the first time, and it probably won't be the last time that it happened. The problem is that we have, within the Kurdish areas in northern Iraq, a particular group, a family, which from previous years, from decades before, has very close relations with the Mossad, with the Israelis, and with the Americans. So the point is that that region is not uniformly supporting this problem. There are other groups and other parties and other movements within that area which are opposed to the presence of the terrorists. But there is one particular group and one particular family who, from long time ago, has been a group that has allowed the presence of the Americans, the Israelis, the British before, to be in that region. And from that region, this is something that goes back to the British division of the area. They created an area in the middle between Iran, Turkey, Iraq, Syria, from where they can always destabilize these countries.
Iran says it is not a party to the conflict in Ukraine and will continue efforts towards a diplomatic solution to the war. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani made the remarks in a presser in response to accusations by Kiev and its Western allies that Russia is using Iranian drones to hit Ukraine. Kanani reiterated Iran's position that it has not sent any weapons to Russia to be used in the war in Ukraine. He said defense cooperation between Tehran and Moscow goes back to before the ongoing war. The spokesman also called on Ukrainian officials not to act at the bidding of other governments. He warned Ukraine against employing threatening rhetoric against Iran, saying that they should beware of consequences. Turkey's police say that they have detained 46 people in connection with Sunday's deadly bomb attack in the heart of the city of Istanbul. The Syrian woman is among the detainees who the police say planted the bomb. According to the police, the woman confessed to have received training by militants affiliated with the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, or the PKK, in northern Syria. But the Kurdish militant group has denied involvement in the bomb attack. The bombing left at least 6 people dead and more than 80 others wounded. The blast took place on a busy Istiklal Street in Istanbul, which is popular with both locals and tourists. International condemnations of the attack and condolences for the victims are pouring in from across the world. Messages of sympathy have been issued by Iran, the European Union, France, Ukraine, Greece, Egypt, and the U.S., among others. Turkey has rejected the U.S. extension of condolences. Turkish authorities have linked Washington's support to Kurdish militants in Syria to the blast, the presidency official says. The attack is a result of the backing the PKK receives from foreigners without mentioning the U.S. The Interior Minister, Soleiman Soylu, also likened the U.S. condolences to a murderer arriving first at the scene of the crime. Our correspondent, Rashan Saglam, earlier joined us to elaborate on the Turkey's rejection of condolences that it received from the U.S.
The Interior Minister, Süleyman Soylu, said that we are not going to accept Washington's condolences in the incident that took place yesterday. The terrorist attack that happened in Taksim was done by terrorists from or related to the PKK, PYD, YPG. And it is known for Turkey and now I think the world that the United States is actually supporting those groups, the PYD particularly, and YPG, which are the armed and the political wings of the Kurdistan Workers Party, PKK, inside Syria. By weapons, by money, and logistics. So Turkey have always called the United States to stop supporting them. Since the Obama administration, this has been a point of conflict between Erdogan and Obama, and this is mainly why the tension was still going on between the two administrations.
Presidents of the United States and China opened their talks in Indonesia's Bali as tensions run high between the two rivals. During the meeting ahead of the G20 summit, the presidents reiterated the necessity of handling relations in a peaceful and proper manner. Joe Biden said the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. For his part, Xi Jinping said that he is looking forward to work with Biden to bring the relationship with Washington back to the right track. It is expected that talks will cover issues such as Taiwan, Ukraine, and North Korea nuclear activities. Tensions between Washington and Beijing have been simmering in recent months, especially over China's calls and the U.S.'s interference in affairs in Taiwan. In a recent resolution, the UN General Assembly refused to recognize the Taliban interim government while discussing the situation in Afghanistan. As our correspondent reports, not recognizing the Taliban could adversely affect the nation.
A resolution was recently presented to the UN General Assembly for the first time after the Taliban took over Afghanistan. While discussing issues including security, terrorism, and the social and economic situation, the Assembly significantly refrained to recognize the Taliban as a government. Experts believe this could affect the nation.
Non-recognition of the Taliban by the global community could negatively affect Afghanistan. It would bring illegitimacy to the Taliban government. It would also have consequences for the country's diplomatic relations, trade, and culture. There may even be more sanctions. These could have adverse effects on people, especially the poor.
In response to this resolution, Suhail Shaheen, the head of the political office of the Islamic Emirate in Qatar, said according to Islamic principles and values, the Taliban are committed to fulfilling all the legitimate rights and demands of the people, and that they are trying to provide the right means and environment to achieve this goal. Experts say the recognition of the Taliban could have positive results.
If the Taliban government is recognized after the observation of human rights and some other standards by the Taliban, it could have very good results for the nation, such as in the fields of international relations and international economic interactions.
Since the Taliban took control 15 months ago, their non-recognition, along with the sanctions imposed on the central bank and the freezing of Afghan assets, has driven the economy of the country to the brink of collapse. It is believed the recognition of Taliban may be a way to improve the situation in the country. But on the other hand, releasing assets and removing sanctions could also be effective. Abdullah Hamirzadeh, Kabul.
Turning now to the Occupy West Bank, where Israeli atrocities show no signs of abating. The regime forces have killed yet another Palestinian In western Ramallah, troopers shot dead 19-year-old Asana Al-Tal in the town of Baytuna. This happened as they opened fire on a car the young woman was riding in. Other passengers of that vehicle have been arrested. The Israeli military also separately arrested 9 people in raids across the occupied West Bank. The regime has recently intensified its deadly crackdown in the region. The campaign has left more than 140 Palestinians dead only this year. Mona Kendall is our correspondent in Ramallah. She joined us earlier to give us more details about the killing of the Palestinian woman.
Israeli forces have already raided Baytuna city, and when they saw the vehicle there, they opened fire at the vehicle, killing the Palestinian girl. And they claimed that there were 2 inside the vehicle, and they arrested them. It's not clear if that's true, if the 2 who were arrested were inside the vehicle or not. But we know that a female Palestinian was shot dead. According to paramedics, she could be 19 or 20 years old. The identity of this girl is not known yet. She was transferred to Palestinian hospital in Ramallah. The Israeli forces have already raided several areas across the occupied West Bank and arrested a number of Palestinians. The Israelis had issued a statement claiming that early morning, Israeli soldiers were surprised by a Palestinian vehicle approaching the forces who stormed Baytuna city, and that's why the soldiers opened fire. But according to the video, it was clear that the vehicle didn't even approach the raiding soldiers. They themselves who opened fire at the corner.
Yemen is facing an acute shortage of medical supplies as the Saudi-led coalition is implementing all sorts of imports by continuing its blockade on the country. Abdul Latif Awashali reports.
The Yemeni Ministry of Health and Population held a press conference in Sana'a to highlight the impact of the continued Saudi siege on the national drug supply program. The event took place amid a severe shortage of necessary medication in the war-torn country.
The Saudi blockade imposed on the national drug supply program has caused one of the world's worst crises in the health sector. Medicines do not arrive on time at all due to the closure of Sana'a's international airport, which has also led to a high rate of death among people with chronic diseases. Patients can't receive basic drugs such as insulin for diabetics, and this is a tragedy no one talks about.
The ministry says almost 169,000 patients cannot receive life-saving medicine and they are in real danger unless the siege is lifted.
The pharmaceutical system in Yemen has been gripped by the Saudi blockade. International companies have partially or completely left the Yemeni market as they face extra costs as well as seizure of vessels for weeks and months. Moreover, medicines should be delivered in special conditions to maintain their quality and effectiveness. The fuel crisis has also negatively affected the shipment of medication.
Earlier, the member of the National Negotiating Delegation, Abdul Malik Al-Ajri, accused Western powers of preventing the entry of medical supplies into Yemen, saying this precedent has never been witnessed throughout history. Officials believe that Saudi Arabia is deliberately preventing medical supplies from entering Yemen to pressure Sana'a to accept the UN agreement as it is. They say the siege has failed throughout 7 years of the war, and the kingdom's measures will push the Yemeni army to carry out new airstrikes. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Now, Italy and France are at odds over the responsibility to take in about 200 asylum seekers aboard an NGO-run ship. Paris has attacked the Italian government following Rome's decision not to assign a port of safety to the ship, while Italy's prime minister has blasted France's aggressive response. Max Civilli reports.
Diplomatic tension between Italy and France keeps mounting as the French NGO-run search and rescue ship Ocean Viking reached the French port of Toulon with its load of 234 asylum seekers on Friday. the ship, had been refused a port of safety by Italy's far-right government for around 3 weeks, a decision that the French government slammed as irresponsible and inhumane. In response to the situation, Paris suspended plans to take in 3,500 refugees currently in Italy, calling on all the countries in the EU's migrant relocation mechanism to adopt similar measures.
È la prima nave.
The Ocean Viking, NGO ship that docks in France today, is the first NGO ship to have ever docked in France, and it has 234 migrants. This generated a very tough reaction with respect to Italy, which has allowed almost 90,000 immigrants to enter since the start of the year. 90,000! All NGO ships dock in Italy. What makes us angry? That Italy has to be the only country to provide a disembarkation port. This is not written in any agreement. France's response was aggressive and unjustified.
A third of the 234 asylum seekers on board the NGO ship will be relocated in France, while 4 passengers with serious health difficulties were transferred to a French hospital. This is not the first diplomatic rift between Italy and France in recent years. In 2019, Paris recalled its ambassador to Rome for consultations, after then Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio urged members of the Yellow Vest movement to continue with a protest against the French government.
There is a clear resemblance between the rift that took place in 2019 and the present one. Both cases are just a mere provocation on the part of nationalist, populist Italian executives. This tension between Italy and France is the result of the insubstantiality of the EU's migration policy.
While EU countries keep failing to collectively assume responsibility on the migrant issue, around 20,000 asylum seekers have died trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea since 2014, while tens of thousands are stuck in Libyan detention centers where torture, sexual violence and abuse are rife. Max Civili, Rome.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the United States, Democrats have retained control of the U.S. Senate after 2 crucial wins in Arizona and Nevada. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Democrats have kept control of the U.S. Senate after a crucial race in Nevada was announced in their favor, cementing a midterms election performance for the party that widely beat expectations. Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto has now beaten Republican challenger Adam Laxalt, a former state attorney general who was endorsed by former President Donald Trump. The Associated Press reported with Catherine Cortez Masto's victory coming on the heels of Democratic Senator Mark Kelly winning re-election in Arizona late on Friday. The win takes the Democrats to the crucial number of 50 seats in the U.S. Senate, with the Republicans currently at 49. The race in Georgia is set to go to a runoff in December. But even if Republicans win in Georgia, a 50-50 split means the Senate would effectively be controlled by the Democrats, because the tying vote falls to the Vice President, Kamala Harris. For the Republicans, it was another blow after they steeply underperformed in many races. The party had touted hopes of a red wave that could sweep across the United States and deliver the upper chamber of Congress into their hands. But instead, with a few exceptions such as Florida, the red wave was more of a trickle. The Democratic win in the Senate is likely to prompt further recrimination in Republican circles over who is to blame for the poor showing of Republicans. Much attention has so far focused on former President Donald Trump after he backed right-wing or celebrity candidates in several key races who lost, such as Dr. Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania. The victory is also another boost for President Joe Biden, after his party defied immediate fears that his low popularity ratings and an electorate battered by high inflation would translate to punishment at the polls. The Democrats also defied historical precedent, as the party holding the White House often loses heavily in midterm elections. The election performance is likely to quiet speculation that Biden may duck out of the 2024 presidential race and leave office after a single term. Now, he can point to solid pieces of domestic legislation in his first year as president, as well as strong midterm performance, in order to bolster internal support within the Democratic Party. Joe Biden said he was incredibly pleased with the turnout in the U.S. election and said the Republican Party would now need to decide who they are. Speaking to reporters in Cambodia ahead of an East Asia summit, Joe Biden said his focus was on the Georgia Senate race in December. The loss of the Senate will focus minds sharply on Donald Trump's ongoing dominance of the Republican Party. Fissures have opened up, with some prominent Republican figures openly appealing to Donald Trump not to announce a 2024 run, as he is widely expected to do next week. Trump himself has lashed out at popular Republican figures who may rival him, such as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who was a rare Republican success in the midterm elections as he easily won re-election and flipped several once-strong Democratic districts, especially in Miami, Florida. The website of CBS News has also covered the same story. Democrats will continue to control the U.S. Senate following the 2022 midterm elections, after Nevada Senator Catherine Cortez Masto on Saturday was projected by CBS News to win a tight re-election race against her Republican rival Adam Laxalt. Her victory gives Democrats 50 seats in the 111th Congress. Vice President Kamala Harris' tie-breaking vote, should it be needed, gives them the majority, regardless of the outcome of the Georgia runoff election in December between Senator Raphael Warnock and his Republican challenger, Herschel Walker. The election is a great win for the American people, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said in a briefing late on Saturday night. With the races now called in Arizona and Nevada, Democrats will have a majority in the U.S. Senate and I will once again be the majority leader. Please, Joe Biden, who is in Phnom Penh, Cambodia, attending the summit for the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, told reporters on Sunday morning that Chuck Schumer has got a majority again. "We're focusing now on Georgia," Joe Biden said. "We feel good about where we are, and I know that I'm an optimist. I understand that from the beginning, but I'm not surprised by the turnout. I'm incredibly pleased with the turnout, and I think it's a reflection of the quality of our candidates, and they're all running on the same program. There wasn't anybody who wasn't running on what we did. They're all saying and sticking with it, and so I feel good." Before Election Day, some Republicans had begun to believe that Senate control was within their reach, since President Biden is suffering from underwater approval ratings amid high inflation and voters' negative views of the economy in all of the battleground states. But in the months before the general election, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell expressed doubt that Republicans could take the Senate, which he blamed on candidate quality. Many of the Republican candidates who lost were far-right candidates endorsed by former President Donald Trump, which gave them momentum during the primary season. But they failed to appeal to independent voters and moderate voters in general election. Senator Pat Toomey, who is retiring from the Senate and whose seat was won by Democratic Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, blamed Donald Trump for the missed GOP opportunity. "The data is overwhelmingly clear. The more candidates who are associated with Donald Trump and the ultra-MAGA movement and this false notion that the election was stolen from him in 2020, the more that was the message, the more they lost, and in many places it was as stark to a more conventional Republican who was winning," he said in an interview on Fox News Channel. Though he didn't identify him by name, Pat Toomey referred to the far-right Republican candidate for governor, Doug Mastriano, as a weak candidate who loses by 15 percentage points, the most for an open seat since the 1950s. He went on to note that, "We lost three opportunities to flip House seats, lost control of the state House, and the party needs to get past Donald Trump." Alaska, well, three candidates are on the ballot in a ranked choice voting system, has also not yet been called, but with the top two finishers both Republicans, CBS News is projecting it will stay in Republican hands. On Friday evening, CBS News projected Arizona Senator Mark Kelly will win re-election over his Republican challenger Blake Masters. In other battleground states, CBS News projected that races in Wisconsin, Florida, Ohio, North Carolina will go to the Republicans, while Democrats will win in Colorado, New Hampshire, and Pennsylvania. In each of the Senate battlegrounds, where CBS News has conducted exit polls, voters said control of the Senate was important to their vote. CBS News conducted statewide surveys in 11 key battleground states in Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, New Hampshire, Nevada, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Wisconsin. In each of these states, voters had a negative view of America's economy.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him,
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood. And we are currently discussing about the first and second sermon of Nahjul Balagha, where Imam Ali alayhi salam, he talks about the issue of the circumstances in which the messengers and prophets came to this world. And we say that these circumstances exist even today in different ways. And it is how we as human beings have been able to react to this and try to, come out of this confusion. That is something we can consider and think about. And this problem that we face today in the world, this issue that we see and the problems and the difficulties that humanity faces is something that is quite reminiscent to the problems that were there at that time. And therefore, the messengers, when they came then, today even, we notice that circumstance is there for the messengers to come. But of course, the final messenger has arrived. So at this time, what we need is the scholars coming and bringing those teachings of the messengers in the best manner so as to bring about the right change that is required in the societies to grow in that direction. And that is why we see that something like the Islamic Revolution came up that brought about the teachings of the prophets and messengers back into the society.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we say that Imam Ali alayhi salam, when he described about the situation of the communities of the past, one of the most important features of these communities was that state of confusion. And because of that state of confusion, it was quite obvious that there was a need for people to come out of that confusion through the messengers. And the messengers did that. They guided the people, they brought them out of the confusion, they told them their direction, they showed them the way, they clarified who is in the right and who is in the wrong. In the similar manner, we today are in need of that. And that is what we call bi'atha. Bi'atha means to have a certain type of, you can say, awakening. Some kind of sudden change within the society. The prophets were the reasons for this change, for this awakening to happen. But in the absence of the prophets, from the narrations we have al-ulama'u warathatul anbiya, that the scholars are the you can say the inheritors of the prophets. They are supposed to read the books. They are supposed to take those statements of the prophets and messengers and the imams and come and come and bring it forth to the people so that the people can see what they require in that situation, those things that they need to do in their lives, in those instances, in different instances. And that is where we see that these discussions become relevant in the present age also.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, when we see that this is the status quo that we have in our communities today, in the world today, and we notice that there are societies and communities that are trying to wake up, but we notice that from these communities there are just a few that have been able to be steadfast. When you look at the essence of these communities that have been able to be steadfast in the path of this confusion, in the direction of truth against that oppression, you will notice they have a few characteristics that, inshallah, we shall mention. Now, some of the characteristics of these communities that have been able to be steadfast in the path of all of these cultural invasions, all of these confusions that have been propagated, that are being propagated by different communities and societies, are, one of those characteristics is that attachment to the statements and the book of God. Why do we say so? It's because connecting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, connecting to the source of existence, connecting to the source of all of these changes that exist in the society, the one who truly is in control of the affairs of the people, that is the only way to find a solution for the issues of the community. The one who has the knowledge, the one who has the power, the one who is aware of all of these different changes and what really humanity requires is God and God alone. Till when will mankind try to experiment different things, you know, and try to, for example, maneuver in his own way to come out of these confusions? He will not be able to, because the more he does it with his own mind, with his own intellect, the more confused he becomes. It is that intellectual step of a human being of submitting to a higher authority that really deserves to be submitted towards is what will cause that society to progress, what will cause that society to go ahead, what will cause that society to be able to defend itself in different fronts, in the cultural front, in the economic front, in the academic front, and in different fronts, and remain strong and go ahead. But that just doesn't mean you just claim to be believers in God and claim to follow God or uphold the teachings of God without the right training, without real and true, research and understanding. One of those issues is to follow the scholars who are pious, who are strong, who have got the knowledge to be able to be steadfast in this path and to continue in the right direction. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio. وبالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو
في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Considering the current state of the U.S. economy, experts and economists are predicting recession in the United States over the next year. The national debt of the United States is increasing every second, and the total national debt of the U.S. has reached more than $31.2 trillion. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Hill newspaper has covered this story. According to a Wall Street Journal opinion poll, high inflation is increasingly creating major strains on all Americans, including those with higher incomes than others. The poll, which was conducted by the paper by John Anzalone and Tony Fabrizio, the chief pollsters for President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, respectively, found that 26% of registered voters with household incomes between $100,000 and $150,000 said inflation is creating major financial strains for their families. That figure is up from 19% in August and 14% in March. The share of Americans with household incomes between $150,000 and higher who reported major financial strains because of inflation remained stable compared to August, but rose significantly from March. 54% of Americans with household incomes of $60,000 or less also indicated major financial strains, up from 51% in August and 47% last March. Annual inflation hit a 40-year high earlier this year before softening in recent months. But price gains remain at elevated levels and the monthly consumer price index, the CPI, has risen at an increasing pace for the past two consecutive months. Like many other surveys, inflation clocked in as the top issue for voters in the poll. 34% said it was the issue that made them the most likely to vote. And more than half ranked it as either the number one or the number two issue. Elevated price gains have caused political headaches for U.S. Democrats and the Biden administration. Republicans have released a barrage of attacks on the issue during their midterm election campaign. 48% of registered voters in the poll said they trusted Republicans in Congress more to handle inflation, the highest level recorded in the last four surveys, which spanned the course of the past year. 27% of respondents in the new poll trusted Democrats more to get inflation under control. CNN has also covered the same story. According to a closely followed University of Michigan survey released on Friday, 11th of November, consumers were feeling slightly worse about the U.S. economy in November amid punishing rate hikes and decades-high inflation. According to estimates on Refinitiv, the preliminary index reading from the monthly survey of consumers showed sentiment fell to 54.7% from 59.9% in October. Economists were expecting sentiment levels to tick down to 59.5%. It's the lowest reading since the summer when sentiment bottomed out after gas prices hit a record high in June. The survey showed that sentiment slumped both for the current economic conditions as well as for those in the near future. Surveys of Consumers Director Joanne Hsu told Bloomberg in an interview following the report's release, sustained high levels of inflation as well as rising interest rates are weighing on consumers, who are also expecting the labor market to weaken in the year ahead. Joanne Hsu said, consumers don't think we're out of the woods yet. The survey also showed that consumers' inflation expectations for this year and 5 years out remained relatively unchanged. This key data point for the Federal Reserve showed that the median expected year-ahead inflation rate was 5.1%, up from 5% last month. According to the data, long-run expectations were at 3%, holding in the same 2.9% to 3.1% range for 15 of the past 16 months. The U.S. Federal Reserve is closely watching for shifts in consumer expectations to determine if inflation is becoming entrenched in the United States. If consumers believe prices will remain high, that could factor in to increased wage demands, which, in turn, could cause businesses to raise prices. The data for the surveys was collected prior to the midterm elections, as well as Thursday's better-than-expected Consumer Price Index, CPI, which showed inflation slowed down to 7.7% in the month of October. Associated Press News Agency has more for us. According to a recent opinion poll, a third of American public say they have fallen behind financially, twice as high as the number of U.S. voters who said the same back in 2020. According to an Associated Press votecast, over the past year, prices have skyrocketed and the annual inflation rate has hovered around 8%. Ordinary expenses, including groceries, rent and gas, are eating into Americans' paychecks. A third of Americans said they're not confident that they can keep up with the expenses. About half of voters in the survey said rising grocery prices were the most significant concern for them, much higher than gas, housing and healthcare expenses. Recent 2022 polling shows that Republicans are poised to take over the House of Representatives, but they have failed to take over the U.S. Senate. GOP candidates across the nation have hammered Democrats on the economy throughout the campaign cycle. According to an Associated Press survey, half of voters said inflation was a significant issue that factored into their vote, while 44% said the future of democracy was a major concern influencing their vote. Meanwhile, Americans are split on whether President Joe Biden is to blame for the high inflation rate, which half in the survey said the president was at fault, and another half said there were other factors outside of his control. With odds of a split U.S. Congress rising, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned that lawmakers' failure to raise the statutory limit on U.S. debt posed a huge threat to America's credit rating and the functioning of America's financial markets. Janet Yellen told Reuters news agency in an interview on Friday, 11th of November, she said, "Cooperation is still possible between Republicans and with Republicans on some issues, but lifting the debt ceiling is a non-negotiable item." Some Republicans have threatened to use the next hike in the $31.4 trillion debt ceiling as leverage to force concessions from President Joe Biden, a Democrat. America's public debt stood at $31.2 trillion on Wednesday, 9th of November, and without an increase, analysts anticipate a potential default crisis by the third quarter of 2023.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been transmitted from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This hadith is about the maintenance of the mosque and the masjid. Right? You know, the masjid is plays a very central role in the Islamic community. Everybody knows that. It's the central place of worship in any Islamic community, and it's been alluded to in the Holy Quran in many places. In one place in the Holy Quran, we read, the places of worship, or the mosques, they belong to Allah. So do not invoke anyone along with Allah. Right? Or in another verse of the Holy Quran, we read, only those who maintains Allah's mosques, who believe in Allah and the last day, and establish the prayer and give the zakat, and fear no one except Allah, they hopefully will be among the guided. So in this verse of the Holy Quran, God alludes to the condition of the people who, you know, who build the mosque, who maintain the mosque, take care of the mosque, and by these conditions we understand that, you know, the maintenance of the mosque is something very important, because these conditions which have been mentioned for the persons who maintain the mosque, you know, they're very stringent and very strict. The Prophet was once asked by Abu Dharr. Abu Dharr was one of the famous companions of the Holy Prophet. How to maintain the mosque? How do we keep the mosque, you know, how do we maintain it? How do we take care of it? To which he, the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, replied, voices should not be raised therein, nor engrossment in wrongdoing. There should be no buying or selling in the mosque, and all vain talk must be shunned as long as you are inside. Right? So these are kind of like the ways to spiritually maintain the mosque. We're not talking about how do we keep the mosque clean, how do we take care of its walls, you know, how do we, you know, construct the mosque. Not, you know, we're talking about how do we spiritually make sure the mosque is performing the function for which it was constructed, right? You know, so the Prophet here alludes to these conditions, you know, voices should not be raised therein. We should not speak loudly or shout in the mosque. You know, there should be no buying or selling in the mosque. It's not a place of transactions. All vain talk should be shunned therein, right? As long as you are inside. In the end, the Prophet ﷺ said, if you do not do this, then you will have no one to blame but yourself on the day of resurrection, on the day of the hereafter. You know, if you do these things, and in the hereafter you are punished for it, you know, the fault of this person lies on the person himself, not on somebody else. Right? So if we want the mosque to fulfill the function for which it is constructed and to maintain its spiritual, you know, its spiritual effect that it should have, you know, then these are some of the conditions which should be fulfilled regarding it. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the maintenance of the mosque in the words of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing a song from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.